Welcome to the Disrupt Education Podcast. I'm Peter Hostrasser. Hey, thanks so much for heading our way on Disrupt Education. If you get a chance, head to disrupteducation.co. You can check out what's going on all about disrupting education. Another thing I want to let you know, head over to the edupexperience.com. I am a proud member of the EdUp Experience Podcast Network. It is an amazing place to find all different kinds of things around education and the way it's changing during and post-pandemic, edupexperience.com. Head over to spikeview.com to show your value in life, in education. Connect your learning journey, spikeview.com. Our next guest is a 15-year-old innovator looking to spark change in education. Jake Donzinger ignites change through meaningful conversation, relevant research, and youth advocacy. He currently hosts the Next Up Ed podcast and oversees marketing and social media at Global Academic Consultants. He shares his learning journey with me and ideas regarding educational reform on this episode. Right after these messages, I talk to Jake. Have you ever thought about creating courses and training online? Without a partner to guide you through that process, you're going to be stressed about why your learners aren't engaged or how to create updated content, missing revenue opportunities, and not even having enough time. I know because I create online courses, and I have a solution for you, e-learning partners. You don't have to be overwhelmed anymore. Become a partner with eLearning Partners to create your courses and training stress-free and achieve the results you want to see. If you are thinking about wanting to create a course or training online and you believe like I believe that no expertise should go unheard, then click the eLearning Partners link in the notes of this podcast and you can start your journey to create your courses and training stress-free. If you want all that and more from the eLearning Partners, hit the link in the podcast notes because there's a free masterclass for you to take. That's right, a free masterclass. Hit that link today. I recently asked Jake, who is a sophomore in high school, why he uses SpikeView to share his learning journey.
I think it's really cool that, you know, SpikeView is really putting that abstract into concrete data and knowledge and then displaying that to the outside world. And I think SpikeView is different than anything else out there. Like I said before, because it's really taking that, you know, those abstract skill sets and those abstract experiences and putting them into data that, you know, is actually mathematic and scientific and, you know, that matches you up with the best programs and, you know, best places for you. People, you know, who are really trying to make those changes in the world, and they're going to be using SpikeView because SpikeView is that app where you can, you know, take those experiences and take those passions and put them out there and share with other people. And that's, you know, that's really powerful. And to that, you know, that professional networking piece, you know, to be with other like-minded teenagers, that puts you ahead. That puts you ahead in a lot of ways. And so, you know, I think anyone who uses SpikeView right now has a leg up in the future, and excited to see, you know, where those SpikeView alumni head up.
Head to spikeview.com. Start your portfolio now for free. The Disrupt Education vlog can be found on YouTube. To hear it in podcast form, search Disrupt Education on any of the following podcast platforms: Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Castbox, Overcast, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Spotify, or Stitcher. Thanks for joining us on the Disrupt Education Podcast. I've got a great guest today. Jake Donzinger is here. Jake, thank you so much for hanging out with us today, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let's. I gave a brief introduction before the ads here. Tell us a little bit more about who you are and what you're about these days.
Yeah, so I'm a 15-year-old freshman, or I'm going into my sophomore year at Middlebridge School. It's a small co-education program specifically for learning differences. It's been a great experience to this point. I'm excited to go back next year, and it's really changed my lens, both positively, and it's also given me some insight into, you know, what needs to change in private education. It's been awesome so far.
Yeah, so that's great. And so with that being said, let's kind of pivot into your education path, right? So you got some learning differences, private, public, you moved around a little bit. Let's unpack that a little bit, man. Tell the audience basically where you started in education, where you are now, and what has that journey been like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was in public school from really preschool to eighth grade, up until the very end of middle school. And really it was only, you know, halfway into my eighth grade year that I decided I wanted to go to private school. Originally it was just private day schools. There were about two in the area, but none of those really fitted me, you know, how you would have liked them to fit. So I was lucky enough to have the resources, the time, and of course the parents and family to kind of rally around me and help me look at boarding schools. And you know, it's really a huge advantage to say, okay, well, this school in Maine better than this school in California? To have those options to choose from is really amazing. And it's something that, you know, most kids deserve. So I hope we can kind of, you know, build on, especially at Middlebridge, offer more scholarships and just make it more widely available.
Well, let's dig then back into, that's pretty young to actually understand. That's a lot of self-awareness. And I think that's awesome, by the way. But how did that evolve? Like, how did you know, wait, this isn't for me. This public school right here is not for me. What was the big, or maybe a couple of identifiers there?
Right. Well, really, it brought the worst out of me. In seventh grade, I was suspended twice. So that was obviously a huge red flag. It didn't really come until eighth grade where I realized, okay, there's a disconnect between me and my friends. They're doing stuff that I'm not into doing. You know, social converse. I wasn't in a lot of classes with them. There wasn't a lot to talk about. So I started to slowly drift away from friends. And that really led to me just kind of looking elsewhere, you know, researching. So yeah, there were plenty of red flags. The high school was giant. My learning differences are, you know, fairly minimal, but I could not have kept up with, you know, 35 kids per class. So yeah, it's a blessing to have it. And I go to a school with 5 kids per class, so it's pretty amazing. But yeah, no, public school was just not, you know, in the books for me. And I was lucky to kind of, you know, identify that. And I had people in my corner identify that as well. So
there's always been a debate about class sizes, and it does work for some and it doesn't work for some. And, you know, obviously I think we all have, differences in the way that we can actually attain knowledge, hold on to knowledge, use knowledge, etc. So without being a psychologist here, tell me a little bit about what does a 5-room classroom do for you over 35 students in a classroom? What's the difference?
Well, first and foremost, the teacher connection is the most valuable part of it. The ability to check in, you know, every 5 minutes, that kind of personal connection, one-on-one, it seems almost, is awesome to have. They know your strengths, they know your areas, you know, of improvement. And yeah, just building that personal connection with them inside and outside the class. In boarding schools, you have, you know, teachers who stay for sports and for after school activities. And then in terms of the kids, you know, with 5-person classes, it's, you know, you get to know your peers more, collaborate with them. And that kind of leads to in the dorm, you know how they roll, and you know how they kind of go. So it's a cool experience for sure.
What does a typical day look like? So many of the listeners here are probably in a private or a public school or have children in those schools. Walk us through a day in the life of a boarding school student.
Yeah. So first of all, I just want to say boarding school is not entitled military school. That's a common misconception. Our days are pretty rigorous, but they're certainly not military school. There's nothing wrong with military school. There's just a lot of misconception, and really there's not a lot of differentiating in terms of the pop culture, you know. So yeah, but so it's pretty busy. It's really preference, but I usually get up at 7:30, take a shower. We don't have personal showers right now. Most schools don't. So it teaches good hygiene habits for sure. Living in a small space. But yeah, so, you know, there's breakfast, at 8:45, 8:50, we have our first period. For me, that's social prag. That's really the kind of emphasis at Middlebridge School. They're changing it now, next year to social and emotional learning. That's an awesome part of Middlebridge School. They're continuing to expand on it, and they have great faculty. leading those classes. So yeah, just classes throughout the day. You have the option of choosing a sport or elective after school. For me, that's basketball. That's baseball in the spring. A lot of kids do art, surfing. We're in Narragansett, Rhode Island, so the surfing is awesome. And there's plenty of opportunities, especially with a school with 70 kids. It's awesome to see, you know, how diverse the activities are.
What are you looking at, like 8 periods a day, or is it 4 classes a day? What does that look like?
I should know this off the top of my head. I believe it's 7. I'm not positive. I know we have school ends at 2:45 and it begins at 8:50. So it's a pretty full day. Obviously we have lunch break within that time. But yeah, it's a pretty full day of classes. I want to say around 7 or 8.
I think one of the questions that my younger listeners are going to ask is, okay, so what do weekends look like, right? So you're there. What kind of activities, you know, most students just go home, right? Or they might hit a doubleheader or baseball game, but that's it on a Saturday afternoon. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, so for my school, what's really special is 100% of our kids are boarders. Everyone participates in weekend activities. Obviously, in COVID, it's been tough. Different policies and all that good stuff. The administration's done a really good job in kind of handling that and being as safe as possible. But in a normal year, like I said, utilizing, you know, what we have around us, the ocean, local sports teams, you know, if you're in New England, a lot of schools go down or up to Boston, depending on where you are. Just kind of utilizing, you know, the cities, the resources, a lot of, you know, activities on campus. We have a nice basketball court we recently had built in 2018. That's always a huge point of fun during the weekend. Really just hanging out, socializing in the dorms. There's nothing wrong with a few hours of Xbox, a couple hours a weekend. So that's always a really nice time to bond with peers.
Well, that's kind of part of social emotional learning, right? Like understanding and that you can't be on all the time and going. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of cool. I do want to ask real quick before I ask the big disrupt education question is like, so with social emotional learning, like what are they doing now and what do you see them, you know, creating into? Because I think this is a hot topic in education right now. People starting to understand, okay, how do I hit those 5 core pieces of social emotional learning as a younger learner? Right. What are some, you've obviously hit that somewhere along the way by saying as a 7th, 8th grader, whoa, these are red flags.
Right.
I think that's awesome. Like I'll repeat that again because I think it is. What are some of the things that you're seeing right now around social emotional learning and maybe some of the plans that you can identify that are coming up next year?
Well, from being in public school for as long as I was, I see a significant effort to include social and emotional learning in every single class. What differentiates Middlebridge School is they have a specific class for emotional learning, social pragmatics, like I said before. So that's huge. And you also have qualified professionals who take the job, not knowing what it is, but who have past experience with working with kids and with working with them on a deeper level. So So for me, it's been a blessing to have that class. I wish more kids had access to that. Hopefully, especially in public schools, they find a way to incorporate a lot of those lessons into, you know, even math or history or science. It's possible, but it takes a little bit of extra work. So,
yeah, 100%, and totally agree with you. It's very strange for me to be talking to a young man your age, understanding this. It's not really strange, but I think sometimes we put blockers on youth and your lens is spot on, man. I mean, I love that. And kind of going into, you said a couple of things, you know, bringing social emotional learning in and access to people who need it. Obviously, boarding school is probably not the cheapest thing. However, it is very, very good for many, many people who possibly be missing out. So that's just going to lead me into the question then. And, you know, you can chop this up any way you want, is how would you change education? What are some of the big items right now we need changes? And then maybe a little bit of a wish list on the back end of that.
Right. Well, like you just said a few moments ago, establishing myself and establishing peers as a reliable voice in education is huge. Are we credible? Do our experiences matter? Obviously, the answer is yes to us, but to some you know, public school administrators and even in some private schools, you know, they don't listen to what the kids have to say. I'm lucky enough to have a great team at Middlebridge School. But yeah, so kind of establishing myself and others, other peers as real voices. And then for me, I would eventually like to open a school. And this would be a private school. I think eventually, you know, in, you know, 200 years or something, I'd like the mark to be, you know, eventually on public education, but it starts in the private education world. I'd like to have a school that operates with four core classes, psychology, philosophy, communications, and health. Those would take the places of your math, science, you know, English, all that good stuff. And those would be electives because we can't ignore the fact that we do need certain, you know, statistics and all that stuff that has a really valuable place in society. So I'm not suggesting we get rid of those subjects, but really make them electives. And so if, you know, if you're looking at a job and your job entails that you have this, experience, you know, you take that class. But I don't think it should be necessary. And that's what I'm going to try to build on.
Tell me a little bit about the ergonomics of this school. What does it look like? Paint us a picture of this, because I love this. You're literally flipping it on its head a little bit and, yeah, and shaking things up. Again, I'm a disruptor of education. It's the podcast. It's what I love. But paint a little bit more of a picture of that. What does the school day look like if you have that? Because you have a humongous presentation. You've been working on this for a while. Yeah, let's unpack that a little bit more. What, tell us the story of a day of what that school looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. So part of what I'm interested in, and I really got this from the New England Innovation Academy, they're opening next year, is human-centered design. So yeah, huge shout out to them. They're doing a great job over there. But yeah, what I would say is, yeah, listening to the, you know, students and parents, what works in a typical school day, what doesn't. I've heard a lot of my peers say waking up early doesn't work in any way at all. You know, obviously not surprising. So I would say, you know, probably a later start. And then I would say specifically for classes, the more deep thinking ones, probably at the end of the day. Just because when, you know, you're in your first period class, probably not as focused as you might be later on in the day. It's also important not to have those classes at the end of the day, because you're probably looking forward to going home. So kind of striking that balance is really important. Obviously athletics, you know, hopefully that could be a big thing. Obviously the resources are, you know, it's though to have an athletics program is, you know, requires a lot of resources. So, but yeah, that's obviously the goal. What I'd like to do with the athletics program, and, you know, if we get to that point, would be less focus on physical training and more focus on emotional and mental training. There was a study a few years back about a basketball team. Half the team meditated for a week and a half and the other half practiced physically. And the, you know, the guys who didn't practice at all were just as good, if not better, in a scrimmage. So,
man, I love that. I mean, you're literally bringing human approach first. That's right. So I know there's going to be a lot of people who are listening are going to want to connect with you and such. But you're also starting a little bit into kind of the marketing realm in looking with consultants around academia. Can you unpack that a little bit for us?
So I'm working with Global Academic Consultants. It's an operation really directed towards helping kids and families find solutions they didn't know existed. And that really resonates with me because I didn't know it. I didn't know Born School existed without, you know, significant help from real professionals. So, you know, my job as the marketing manager is to really reach out and find those people who kind of don't really know their path yet, to assist them and really to refer them to Joanna Kane. She's the head. She's the head of the program. She's awesome. So it's been an awesome experience so far. It's, you know, it's real. I have a co-host who you know, also goes to boarding school. So it's really nice to kind of see those different perspectives, school to school. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it and really just kind of, you know, diving into the education industry and seeing if I can build connections and seeing if it's a good fit. So I'm excited.
I'm super excited. I'm super geeked out because education, entrepreneur, to see somebody your age doing that is just, honestly, it's phenomenal. One last question around advice, right? So actually, it's kind of two questions wrapped in one. you have a 15-year-old who is just struggling with school right now. Maybe they don't have all the resources, but what do you tell that young person? What kind of advice do you give them to keep going and to keep searching?
I would say to be a nomad, to know your self-worth. It's, you know, to advocate on a level where you're not seen as a pest, but as a person who really is struggling. I would say, you know, resources. I was lucky enough to have resources that 99% of kids aren't. So, you know, part of that is I would love to kind of expand people's resources, and that's what I'm trying to do with Global Academic Consultants. But yeah, it's really tough when you have parents telling you that you're at the right place, or that, you know, your school is fine, you're just not working hard enough. There's a huge disconnect between teachers, parents, students. The question is, how can we bridge that gap? How can, you know, kids have a more dominant voice in education, so that they can, you know, self-advocate appropriately and, you know what's best for them, and more importantly, have parents and teachers respect that.
So, like, maybe my daughter or my son is struggling in school, or maybe there is a red flag. Maybe they did get detention or kicked out of school.
Right.
How should, what's the best way, in your opinion, for a parent to really respond to that?
Well, I would say not overreacting. Obviously, I'm not a parent. I'm not qualified for this at all. But I would say, you know, just talking to my parents, don't overreact. Kind of let the situation play out. You know, just because someone gets suspended once or twice doesn't mean the school isn't perfect for them. I would say, in terms of academics and, you know, social life, those are really the red flags to look for. And yeah, just listening to, you know, the child with your full attention is really critical. I was lucky enough to have my parents, you know, do that for me. So yeah.
That's wonderful advice, man. Want to give you a chance. How can people connect with you? Chat with Jake. How can people talk a little bit more deeper about all the things you're doing around education? Because you are doing some amazing things, my man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So yeah, I have a LinkedIn page. It's just Jake Donziger. So yeah, that's up right now. My Gmail is also in that. And then also my presentation is linked in the LinkedIn. So yeah, I look forward to people kind of seeing that, looking through that. That's really the goal, to kind of get that out to as many people as possible. So
100%, man. It's an honor. It's a pleasure. It's a privilege to learn from youth as an educator myself. And also just to hear your voice and to listen to your ideas and you know, we're obviously in a conversation around this beyond the podcast. So, dude, you're a disruptor of education. I really appreciate it. And Jake, thanks so much for hanging out with us on the podcast today.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Thank you all for listening. We really appreciate you guys. Check Jake out. I'll put all his information down at the bottom. Make sure you hit that subscribe button, and we'll talk to you next time on Disrupt Education.